Okay, hi everyone. Sorry about that delay. Good to see everybody. Thank you for making time to join us on, not a free period or club period, whatever it's called. Okay, I want to talk about something that I've not done so before in the X amount of years I've been giving shiurim here. The topic of parameters and priorities in Kivud Av V'Em. This is obviously a huge topic, both in halacha and in machshava, and probably most importantly in real life, as far as real life situations. And I'm only just going to sort of touch on that somewhat indirectly, and we'll get to this over the course of this year, based on a topic that comes up from this past week's parasha, and then we'll maybe get into some of the more, I guess, trickier issues of Kivud Av V'Em. If you don't have a source sheet, please take one. And I also included my email, my phone number on the back page. If people ever feel about some of the issues we're going to mention, or just in general, that it's nice to have another set of ears on life issues, certainly feel free to reach out. Okay, if I ask you the mitzvah Kivud Av V'Em, who are we obligated to be mechabed? Who are we obligated to give respect to, or are we obligated to fear as far as the mitzvah yira? Of course, every person here would say, my parents. Kivud Av V'Em means to respect my parents. But as we well know, the mitzvah Kivud Av V'Em is certainly expansive beyond the parameters of just respecting parents. There are other people also who are out there that maybe fall into the rubric of Kivud Av V'Em. And that's discussed very famously in the Gemara in Ksuvos, in Daf Kuf Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara says, Tana Rabbanan, B'shas P'tiras El Sherebi, So Amar, Libnai Anitzarech. Bring me in my sons. I want to give them a last sort of second pep talk. And just as a side note, there's so many fascinating stories in the Gemara of the final words of Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai, the final words of the various Tanayim. It's incredibly meaningful. Sort of those scenes of the last things that these people say to their children or say to their students. Okay, so Nichnasu Banav Etzlo, the children came in. So Amar Lahem, he's haru b'chavod imchem. You should be very conscientious to be mechabed your mother. Okay. Also, he tells them, make sure that while I'm lying here ill, please make sure there's always a candle that is lit by me. Anybody know the reason for that? To have a candle which is lit by a person who is a goses or near death. Because, psychologically, we assume that it's very healthy for a person. And in fact, this is something that you could do on Shabbos for someone who is a cholish yesh bo sakana. You could light a candle next to their bed, even if that person is blind, because the light brings them comfort. A weirder line. Shulchan yehei aruch b'mekomo. Make sure that next to my bed there is a table set up. Mita dehei mutzas b'mekomo. Make sure that the bed is made properly, etc. Okay? And then continuing on the next line, what seems to be strange of Rebbe's advice or command to his children to be zahir, to be conscientious, to make sure that you respect your mother? What seems to be odd, unusual, weird, unnecessary? What seems to, you see that line, so already something perhaps jumps out at you. Okay, the language usually of zahir means it's not something you really have to do, but please be careful to do it, right? You don't really have to do X, but please give it your attention. Hisaru means like, can you be conscientious about doing the following? So the Gemara says, Hisaru b'chavadim imchem. So the Gemara says, Daraisahi. That in fact is an obligation from the Torah. Why do you have to say that you should be careful about it? We know the Torah says, Kavedes avicha v'esimecha, as the Pasuk says. So the Gemara gives another answer at the end of this line. Okay, so it says, Eishes av havya. Because this person was not the mother, this person was Eishes av, the stepmother. I'm not sure many people here have stepmothers or stepfathers, but, it can sometimes be a tricky business. And therefore he says, I'm dying and we have the stepmother, which doesn't sound great, but, the stepmother in the house, and please be mazir in her kavod. So Gemara returns back, something that I don't know if every person here knows. So Eishes av nami doraisahi. Wait a second. What do you mean be conscientious about respecting your stepmother? That's also a chiyuv d'oraisa. It's a chiyuv d'oraisa to respect one's stepmother as well. By show of hands, was anybody aware of this beforehand? That the chiyuv d'oraisa is not just for the mother, but it's for the stepmother also. Okay? I imagine most people probably, they knew that you had to. You weren't sure the level of the obligation. Okay, d'tanya, like the b'raisa says, kaved es avicha v'esimecha. Okay, es avicha, why does it have to say es? It should say kaved avicha v'imecha. Why does it say es avicha v'esimecha? So kaved es avicha v'esimecha, es avicha zu es avicha. The es comes to be marbe, comes to include even your stepmother. V'esimecha zu ba'al imcha, right? And the es, your mother, comes to include your stepfather as well. How about the extra vav? Kaved es avicha v'es imecha. Okay, why do we need that? Everyone's favorite. L'rabos es achicha hagadol. To come to include the necessity of respecting one's older brother. Okay, now just out of curiosity, does that sound like a chiyuv d'oraisa or chiyuv d'rabbanan? This necessity of respecting your older brother, does that sound just based on the Gemara, d'oraisa, d'rabbanan? What do you think? D'oraisa. It sounds d'oraisa because we assume that respect for your stepmother's d'oraisa, for your stepfather's d'oraisa. So the extra vav would seem to include as well the chiyuv d'oraisa, respecting your older brother, which could be a shir all to itself. You're only your older brother. How about your older sister? If you have the lucky distinction of being the youngest sibling in a family of 14 older brothers, you know, does it mean you have a chiyuv d'oraisa to respect all of those older siblings? Is this only something that is true when your parents are alive? How about once they're dead? Are you then now allowed to, like, you know, do something to them? What are the parameters of respecting your older siblings? What sort of falls under that? You know, how about the idea the post can speak about, can a younger sibling get married before an older sibling? All these things are sort of part of that discussion. But at the end of the day, we assume that all of these things are obligations: stepmother, stepfather, older brother. So why does Rebbe have to come ahead and tell his children, make sure to respect your stepmother? That's already part of the obligation. So the Gemara says, so hani mili mechayim avali achar misa lo. Okay, anybody know what that means? Hani mili, what's hani mili? When we say that you're obligated to respect your stepmother, that's only mechayim. What's mechayim? When who's alive? Somebody? It means when your father's alive. Then you have to give kavod to the stepmother. But that obligation does not extend past the father's death. So therefore, Rebbe is telling his children, I'm dying now. You don't have a chi of a kibbut ava'im for my wife, so to speak. But I'm asking you to be mazhir, to be careful and considerate and conscientious about that obligation. Okay? Everyone have that? So we have father, mother, stepmother, stepfather, older brother, and all of those seem to be chiyuvei d'oraisa. Okay, anybody have any thoughts, comments, feelings about this Gemara? Anybody have any feelings about their older siblings they want to, maybe another time. Okay, anybody have a comment about what seems to be left off of this list of the obligations and kavod? What do you think could be or should be on this list that's not? Please, yeah. So an older sister, the question would be whether that's included as part of the older brother or not. That's a suffix in the poskim. In theory, you shouldn't think there should be a distinction, right? You know, in the same way there's no distinction between father and mother, there shouldn't be a distinction between brother and sister. So that's something which is discussed in the poskim, yeah? Stepmother already is included. Stepfather is also included. I mean, we say that es imecha comes to be married by your stepfather, right? Stepfather, stepmother, older brother, are all those three are included in the pasuk already. But what's not included, and this is a lengthy discussion, is the issue of father-in-law and mother-in-law. Is that also a chiyuv? What is the nature of that chiyuv? Those are obviously sometimes, you know, tricky relationships. Sometimes more tricky, sometimes less tricky than your own parents. That's also discussion, but clearly we know you're obligated also in the kavod of your in-laws, but that's not really part of the pasuk. Okay, and won't be the last category where you would think, wait a second, so stepmother, stepfather, father-in-law, mother-in-law, older brother, and that which perhaps you're not even mentioning because it's so obvious would be grandparents, right? Grandparents are not mentioned at all. So why would you think perhaps that grandparents are not mentioned at all? And there's nowhere in the Gemara that tells us that there's this mitzvah. Ooh, sorry. I apologize. This chair just collapsed. Okay. Anyway, there's nowhere in the Gemara that tells you about the necessity of respecting one's grandparents. So how come that's not included? Anybody have a thought? Yeah.
There's no...
Okay. So maybe the pshat is that it's so intuitive, right? If the assumption of the reason of why you're being mechabed your parents is because of the idea of mesorah, the idea of looking what came before you, and the idea of looking at your family generation, so maybe it's so obvious that they're included, and that's why they're being included. And in fact, that is the answer given by many acharonim. What's your name?
Rachel.
What Rachel has said, that they're obviously included in the mitzvah kivud av aim, and that should be already self-evident. Okay, there is a very fascinating position by the Stechemed. The Stechemed is one of the great Sephardi poskim, and he said something that I think many of you will find either wrong or problematic, and many people have attacked this position, namely that the mitzvah of respect for your grandparents is only a function of the kavod you need to have for your parents, right? I mean, why are you mechabed your grandparents? Because it's your father's father, father's mother, mother's father, mother's mother, meaning that in and of itself, maybe they're not people who are designated for kavod, but out of the respect for your parents, so therefore this is all included in the rubric of kavod for your parents. Right? I mean, your grandparents per se maybe don't need that or don't warrant that, but this is all through your parents. But I think most people would probably assume that that sounds like a little bit of a weird position.
I also think that would be a weird position just because you have a chiyuv of honoring elderly people.
Right. Sure. So what Shana is saying should be pointed out, there's a mitzvah of kavod for all older people past a certain age, standing up for them. I always like sort of laugh a little bit. You go to weddings, and I'm sure you've all done this before because like everyone does this. You stand up for everybody who decides they're going to throw like a rabbi in front of their name, even though like you don't know who they are. They may not even be Jewish. And I'm like, you know, oh, a rabbi so-and-so who might be, you know. The real chiyuv is to stand up for the grandparents who walk down the aisle, you know. And the only person you have to stand up for who's like a rav from 20, 30, 40, 50 feet away is if it's your Rebbe Mufak, not some guy you don't know who he is. Listen, it's a nice thing to stand up, but the real chiyuv is on older people. What we're discussing as far as grandparents is there an extra chiyuv of kavod for them the way that there would be for your parents? Namely, would you say kaddish for your grandparents? Would you do any of those things beyond the normal obligation for older people that, of course, should be there for your grandparents or for anybody else? Okay? Now, this issue is, in fact, discussed in the Rishonim, and the reason I'm mentioning it now is because it just came up a few days ago in Parshas Vayigash, and it's most famously identified with the position of Rashi. The Pasuk says, Vayisa Yisrael v'chol asher lo, Vayavo be'er ha'shava. This, of course, is Yaakov coming down to Mitzrayim to meet Yosef. Vayizbach zvachim le'elokei aviv Yitzchak. Okay? And he offered sacrifices to the God of his father Yitzchak. Okay, everyone knows this pasuk. So the question that the Rishonim deal with is why doesn't say Elokei Aviv Yitzchak ve'Elokei who else? Ve'Elokei Avram, which should be his grandfather also. So if you see Rashi says the next line: Chayiv Adam b'Chvod Aviv Yoser mi'B'Chvod Zkeino. A person needs to respect his grandparents. There's a chi of respect for grandparents, but he needs to be mechabed his father more or his mother more. And that's why in the pasuk it only says lelokei aviv Yitzchak, but not his grandfather. Lefichach, therefore Rashi continues, tola b'Yitzchak v'lo b'Avram, right? Because there's more of a necessity to be mechabed your father, therefore it only says lelokei aviv Yitzchak, but doesn't say anything about Avram. Okay, now before we move on past this Rashi, anybody have a comment or a question on this Rashi based on perhaps other information that you know? And if you don't, if nobody does, we'll just leave it and maybe come back to it later on. Okay, fine. So we're going to leave it for now. But again, Rashi clearly seems to indicate that there is a mitzvah of kavod for grandparents, but the mitzvah for parents are greater than for grandparents. Now, that being said, there are those people who disagree, namely the Maharik. The Maharik was in a late Ashkenazi Rishon. He has a number of very, very famous tshuvos, responsa. And in one of the tshuvos, he says, there's absolutely no mitzvah of kavod for grandparents. If, let's say, your grandfather passes away, you have no more obligation to say Kaddish for them than anybody else. All the normal things you do for parents, standing up and not calling by your first name and doing this and doing that, all this, that does not apply to a grandparent. He says there's no chiyuv of kivat ava'im for grandparents. And his major proof seems to be that it's not mentioned anywhere. The pasuk doesn't say it, and there's no source for it, and therefore he says there's no obligation, unlike the position that we said from Rashi. And let's take a look at the Ramah, see what the Ramah says. So Chayiv Adam L'Chabed Chamav, who's Chamav? His father-in-law. This is the position of the Shulchan Aruch. And then the Ramah says, Haga Yesh Omrim, De'ein Adam Chayiv B'Chavod Avi Aviv. A person is not obligated to respect his grandfather. This is the position of the Maharik, as you see the Ramah quotes. Ve'eino nearly, the Ramah says, that does not appear to me to be right. Elod chayiv b'chavod aviv yoser mikavod avi aviv. No, you're obligated to respect your grandfather. It just happens that you're obligated to respect your father more than your grandfather. Okay? So again, we have the Maharik who says you're not chayiv, and Rashi says you are chayiv. Now, what question would you have on the Maharik? The Maharik who says you're not chayiv in a mitzvah of kivud ava'im for grandparents. Just misvara, or emotionally, or anything else, why? What question would you have on that Maharik?
Yeah. What's his basis?
Well, his basis is like the lack of psukim, but it's not, you know, misvara, I would agree with you. So if you look in the Bach over here, everyone know who the Bach is? The Bach was with Yoel Sirkis, one of the great giants of the Acharonim. Rav Yoel Sirkis has a commentary, the Bach, on the Torah. The Torah is Rabbeinu Yaakov, the son of the Rush. He wrote the major, major Sefer on Halacha before the Shulchan Aruch. And then the commentaries on the Torah are the Beis Yosef and the Bach. So the Bach really takes the Maharik to task, and he says the following. He says, first of all, if the Pasuk tells us that you're obligated to honor your stepmother or your stepfather, how can you possibly say that there should be more respect for your stepfather than there would be for your own grandfather? He says, it doesn't make any sense, okay? And he says, just misvara doesn't make any sense. That's number one. And then number two, anybody have like another sort of argument against the Maharik? So there's a very famous Gemara. What were you saying? Rachel or Beck, I'm saying?
Rachel. No,
Right, which actually, by the way, is a very fascinating question, not for now, it's like a sort of a separate shiur, is honoring parents who are like lousy parents. Not chas shalom that it shouldn't exist here, but a parent who was abusive, a parent who left at an early age, a parent who's a rasha. They might not be an awful parent, but they might be an awful person. So is the kavod out of sort of the values they instilled in you, or is the kavod out of the fact that they birthed you, right? Which would sort of go into this issue. I'll tell you just as far as my rabbinic history. I've been in two rabbinic jobs before in Einstein Medical School, and now where I've been in Muncie the last 13, 14 years. And it always happens that the first question that I get in these jobs are always like the last question you'd want to get. Like, you know, you want someone to ask you, well, this cold spoon fell into this sink, and like, what's, you know, but you always get like when you least want it. So the first day I moved into Muncie, someone called me. He said, Rob, I have a question. He said, we don't really know each other, but my biological father left me when I was young. He was a jerk of a person. We haven't been in touch for 30 years. When my mother got remarried, I took on my new father's name, which is sort of saying a lot. He says, when he dies, do I have to sit shiva for him? This is like the first question, you know, and I'm like, oh gosh, like ask me anything, but, and it's sort of the same type of question also along the same lines, sitting shiva or saying Kaddish for a stepfather who's not your father, but he really raised you. He didn't birth you, but he raised you. And so all those sort of questions are complicated. But the more you say that it's about like birthing you, so then a grandparent should also be included, just like a parent. And in fact, by the way, if you look in the last line of the Bach, okay, the Bach says, the last two lines, okay, V'tu, right? You see the two in the middle of the line. The ikir tam ha-kavod, the major reason for kavod, shehishva kavod av eim l'chavod ha-makom. You guys all know this Gemara, that a father and mother are considered to be like almost a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Mishum gimel shutfin. Three parties bring you into the world. Your father, your mother, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. K'moshe nisbar b'tchil simen zeh. Im ke mitam zeh, gam avi avi b'chalal shutfus. If the whole idea is the partners who brought you into the world, so that would be true, Rachel, as well, by grandparents, and that's exactly the Bach's point as well. And the Bach says, I'll bring you another source, because we're told that a grandfather, any of you ever have this chos of learning with your grandfather, or your grandmother, or great-grandparent? So the Gemara says that the grandparent has an obligation of the chinuch of their grandchild because of the principle that b'nei banim harehem kebanim. Your grandkids are like your children. A person is not yotze the mitzvah of pru urvu until they themselves have had grandchildren. I'm not sure if you're aware of that. Because of this principle of b'nei banim harehem kebanim. So for all of these reasons, logically, the fact that they sort of brought you into the world, the fact that they're like your parents, they said the Maharik does not make any sense. And in fact, that is the conclusion the Rama reaches, that there's an obligation of parents and an obligation for grandparents as well. Everyone following that? Everyone have all that? Any questions or thoughts? Okay, now, what's fascinating, and I'm not sure what to make of this, is that there seems to be an explicit stira of Rashi, in a Gemara that hopefully none of us have ever heard of in real life, but certainly interesting on a halachic level, okay? Everybody here knows what a Goel Hadam is, right? A redeemer. Anyone want to just, for those who don't know perhaps, what's the halacha of Ir Miklat and a Goel Hadam?
Somebody kills somebody with shogeg and they don't run to the Ir Miklat, but the family of the person
that
was killed.
Right, or even they run to the Ir Miklat, but they're apprehended before they get there. So then the family would be allowed to, again, it sounds like somewhat on the brutal side, but, you know, again, there's many explanations for that. The family member would be allowed to kill the rotseach before he gets to the Ir Miklat. The question is, what constitutes family, right? In other words, what type of family, you know, if you're, let's say it's your third cousin, but you're really close and you're a little bit bloodthirsty and you hate the guy, like, and it's like, what exactly defines family when it comes to the halacha of Goel Hadam? Okay, everyone hear that? So the Gemara says, again, we sort of have to go through like a few sort of machinations of the Gemara. So Tani Chada, one Tana says, Av Shaharag Bino, Nase Lo Go Hadam. A father who kills Chas V'Shalom, a son, okay, so Nase Lo Go Hadam. What does it mean, Nase Lo Go Hadam? Anybody want to guess what that means? When? Well, it means that his other son, in theory, would be allowed to kill the father on the way to the Ir Miklat. Okay, I mean, the son would be allowed to kill the father to redeem his brother's blood. Okay, V'tanya Idach, there's another brisa that says, Ein b'no nasa lo gol adam. Right? The other Tana says that a son cannot be the gol adam, cannot be the redeemer. So even if, let's say, your father, Chas V'Shalom, butchered your brother, you say, you know what? It's not my sort of role, and therefore the father you're not allowed to kill your father. Okay, so the Gemara says the following: So lema harabi yosek lili v'harabi kiva. Maybe this goes back to machlokas tanayim of whether it's an obligation or a rishus to kill the rotseach. Right? If it's an obligation, then maybe even the son can do it. If it's a rishus, he can't. Okay. So the Gemara says v'tizbara bein l'man diyamar mitzvah bein l'man diyamar rishus mishari. It shouldn't make a difference. You should never be allowed to apprehend and to kill your father. So v'yomer Rabba bar Rav Huna v'chein Tana de Rabbi Shmuel l'chol ein habein nasa shaliach la'aviv. The son can never operate as a shaliach based in to punish their father. You know, sometimes we have like a really lousy relation between the father and the son. And Basin has to punish him, the son would be like, okay, you know, I'll do it, right? So you can't happen. For instance, for what? L'hakoso, to give him malchus. The son, as much as he may want to, cannot volunteer for such a job. Ulekloso, to give to curse him. Chutz mimesis, etc. So therefore, how does one Tana say that the son could be a Goel Hadam? And one Tana says the son can't be a Goel Hadam. So the Gemara answers, so Ella, Lokasha, Ha Bibino, V'ha b'ben b'no. Okay? What does it mean? Ha b'beno, ha b'ben b'no? The son is not allowed to kill the father if, let's say, the father had killed his brother, right? But if, let's say, the father had killed his son, okay, the grandson is allowed to redeem his father's blood. So when we say that a son can be the Gol Adam, that means grandfather kills the son, okay? His son, the grandson, is now allowed to go ahead and is allowed to kill his grandfather before he goes into the Ir Miklat. Right? Everyone have that halacha? It's like one of these crazy stories you read about in the local newspapers, unfortunately. Hopefully this was never like a real life situation, but just sort of theoretically, it's an interesting question. So Rashi says, so Hachigar Sinan, Elokasha, Habibino, Habibembino. So the Rashi says, Haditanya, Ein Bino, Nasagol Hadam. When we say that the son cannot be a redeemer for his father, Shorotzeach Kamar, means that if your father had killed your brother, you can't kill your father. But Haditanya Bino, Nasagol Hadam, Bibino Shoharu Kamar, means that the grandson can kill the grandfather. Why is that? Shehu ben beno shorotzeach. This is the grandson of the murderer. V'eino mushar al kvodo, because the grandson is not obligated to be mechabed, to respect the grandfather. Therefore, as a result, he would be allowed to be the redeemer. He would be allowed to kill his grandfather in retribution for killing his father. Okay. Now, what's the obvious problem in Rashi? Yeah. Yeah, Rashi says in Parshas Vayigash that you are obligated in kavod for grandfather, but over here in Maseches Makos, Rashi goes out of his way to say, "But why can the grandson kill the grandfather? Mishum she'enu musar b'chavodo, because he's not obligated in the respect of his grandfather." It seems to be a very, very clear cut stira. So, anybody have a teretz to this stira in Rashi? So the Vilna Gaon says something. I think this is what the Vilna Gaon means. But to me, the Vilna Gaon makes no sense. If you want to take a look at it on your own, you can look in the Shulchan Aruch. The Vilna Gaon says that there might be a difference between your mother's father, who maybe you're not obligated to respect, and maybe your father's father, who you are obligated to respect. And maybe these two cases are speaking about different types of grandparents. Now, that doesn't seem to make a lot of sense. You know, why should there be a chiluk between your mother's parents versus your father's parents, right? So the Vilna Gaon, we're not exactly sure what he means. But anybody have a different way of resolving this problem in Rashi? One case, Rashi says you have an obligation to mechabed your grandfather. It's just maybe not as much as your father. And another place, Rashi says, mishum she'enu mutar b'kavodo. So how would one... Yeah, what's the name? Right. So this, okay, what's your name?
Aviva.
Aviva. So what Aviva says, it seems to be a real support for that Stei Chemed we mentioned. Because the Stei Chemed says you're only obligated to respect your grandfather as long as your father's alive. Here, your father is no longer alive. It was his father who did it to him. So you're right. That would definitely be a support for that position. Although most people seem to reject, and as I think you probably would also, that's the Chabad who says, well, you only have to respect your grandfather because your father's in the picture. That doesn't sound like likely, but certainly that would support that position of the Chabad. Okay? So maybe what you can say, well, let me just check the time. I don't think that's right. Okay, we have another 4 hours until this year is over. Just get comfortable. 3:17. Okay, so maybe what you can say, yeah, Shani.
So I don't want to make a joking question. Rashi says, by the Gemara, it says, by
right.
The
maybe different, right? Right.
Versus
yeah, absolutely. Could be.
So maybe there's something.
Right. What time, by the way, is this finished?
3:35.
Okay. So maybe what you could say, by the way, which is neither here nor there, was that Rashi doesn't mean that there's no chiyuv or kavod of grandparents. What he means is that it's really, and this is a little bit of what you said, it's really overshadowed by the obligation for a father. Does Rashi mean to say there's no obligation to give kavod to your grandfather? Absolutely not. What he means is that Eino Musar B'Chavod Zikno, in comparison to the respect and obligation he has for his own father, who's been slain, right? In comparison to that obligation, he does not have an obligation towards the grandfather, but certainly, all things being equal, and normal situations, clearly, you and I and all of us do have obligations towards our grandparents, for those of you who are lucky enough to have grandparents alive. Now, I want to go back, because we only have a few minutes, and I could really sort of maybe should have left more time for this, to discuss the question as to why would the Torah not include grandparents? And this obviously relates to this issue. And I want to mention something that is probably not pshat, but I think it's definitely pshat in the world of emotions and psychology and relationships. So one answer that we gave was because grandparents are so obvious, they're included within parents, okay? Another answer we gave is that maybe this day chemed, namely that you're only obligated to your grandparents as a reflection of your parents. But maybe there's another answer as well, namely that the relationship that a person has with their grandparents, not always, but tends to be often a more simple relationship. Because, Rachel, as you said before, we can recognize that this is a person who helped bring me into the world. They play often a positive and supportive role. They can play like a loving role. They can often be people who are guides in all different ways, but you're not living with them, you know, and they're not the ones who are in charge of your upbringing. There's not the same level of tension. There's not the same level of of a back and forth. There's not the potential for frustration the way that there probably is in the parental relationship or the relationship with a stepfather or stepmother and older brother. So maybe the Torah only has to come and be mechayiv you in those relationships that require chizuk and require a reminder. The reminder is, I'm about to call home. This issue is going to come up, right? I know that I'm going to feel X, Y, and Z, or I may want to say X, Y, and Z, or I don't want to do, but there's a mitzvah kibud av v'aim, and therefore I need to just be maybe more mindful of my tone and sensitivity and time spent, et cetera, because of the very, very nature and very complexity of relationships that exist between parents and kids, even in the best relationships, even in amazing relationships, even with parents who are amazing, like I'm sure that most of your parents are, right? There still is a dynamic of complexity that exists, and therefore maybe the Torah is telling you, okay, remember, there's a mitzvah kibud av v'aim, and my grandparents perhaps is not the same necessity of expressing that feeling. Now, it makes a person contemplate a little bit, as I think I work in YU with the guys your age. So these are things that I speak about a certain amount with them, either publicly or privately. The stage of life that, by definition, gives voice to sometimes complex dynamics. And namely, that's really sort of the stage of life that you guys are in now. And every stage comes with its own wonderful opportunities, but sometimes challenges as well. But often things are more defined at different stages of life. When you're 13 years old, unless you were a juvenile delinquent, which I have a feeling none of you were, Shoshana maybe, but unless you're a juvenile delinquent, that you're the kid in the house. Your parents tell you, go to bed. Okay, I'll go to bed. Some kids fight more, some kids fight less. But there's some general sense that if here's like your parents' orbit, you're living squarely inside of your parents' orbit, right? And you may not always like it, you may want to fight it, but it's sort of like very defined roles and expectations. Again, sometimes difficult, but it's very clear. And likewise, fast forward, I guess you guys listen, the average age is 21. So fast forward, 15 years from now, 35 years old, 40 years old, Amir Hashem, you have your own house, you have your kids, you have your husband, your families, your lives, etc. You're living in your own thing, you're not living in your parents' basement, you're sort of doing your own thing in life, where clearly their orbit is over here, and your orbit is somewhere over here. And then sometimes it's sort of like navigating those orbits, because you have your in-laws, and you have your this, and you know, and all those things, and where we're going for Yontif, and how do we make boundaries, and all those sort of different things that exist when you have like two different orbits. Now, how would you, if you're making like a diagram of the ages between, let's say, 17 and 25, so like what would that diagram sort of look like a little bit? So in the average normal functioning case, and not every situation is normal, you sort of have like two interlocking circles, right? And that interlocking circle might sort of, in a very sort of, I guess in a comical type of way, reflect the fact that people are sort of living on their own, they're living in the city, they're in a dorm, they're in an apartment, they're making up their own class schedules, they're doing this, they're doing that, and they're also bringing home their laundry for their mother to do, like on the weekends, you know? Yes, you know, I have a daughter your age, you know, where it's like, even my own wonderful daughter and other people, you know, you'll text 25 times a day about this, but also, I'm doing my own thing, and I don't want to be told, you know, whatever, and I'm going to make my own decisions. I mean, all of which is completely, completely normal. So, like, living in these, like, dual sections of independent life, independent decision-making, while at the same time, both practically, financially, there's an enormous level of dependence as well as it should be that there's still the dependent and independent model. Now, within that rubric, sometimes it's complicated what the role should be, right? Is it a parent's role, for instance, if their child is getting married and the parents are supporting the child about having a say about using birth control? Is it a parent's role to be super involved in issues of dating or career? Is it a parent's role to, and how that's navigated, right? And sometimes you have parents who do a great job at walking that line, sometimes, usually, hopefully, on most days, and other situations where, whether it's because the kid is trying to ferociously pull away, maybe the parent is not there enough, maybe the parent is there too much, maybe the parent is a little bit of a helicopter, like all those things, it's just trying to navigate that space is certainly, certainly, certainly complicated. And again, maybe a little bit of the rationale of the necessity of the Torah telling us something that's so logical to respect our parents, it needs to be reinforced because of sometimes the hurt feelings, the complex feelings, the nuanced feelings, the difficult feelings in navigating sometimes those spaces. Now, a fascinating piece of that, I only have just a few moments left. I'm afraid if I touch anything here, it's going to... I have a few minutes left. A fascinating piece of that is what exactly is the extent of a parent's obligation or a child's obligation to keep it out of danger. And I have to say again, professionally, I probably deal with this question maybe two or three times a week. Kids that are having issues with their parents, they don't want to do X, Y, and Z, and it could be about a whole different list of things. And the question is, you know, am I violating keep it out of the aim by not doing what my parents want? Or by going against their wishes of my summer plans, or my career plans, or my this, or my that. You know, what exactly is that line of keep it out of the aim? Okay, anybody want to share their opinion? If I ask you, tell me in a broad way, how would you define the mitzvah of keep it out of the aim? I know this sounds very, very obvious, but it's not so obvious. Anybody have any thoughts? Okay, so I'll give you two different options. One option is that keep it out of the aim is defined by a series of obligations to provide for the needs of your parents. The way that you speak to them, to make sure that especially as they get older, they have the food that they need, to make sure that they're spoken to in a respectful way, to make sure that they have precedence in whatever the situation may be. Okay, that's option number one. What might option number two be? Option number one is a series of obligations, a series of behaviors, a series of to fulfill the needs of your parents, okay? Anybody have an option number two? Option number two would essentially be doing what you have to do to listen to them, right? To fulfill their wishes, to make them happy, okay? Everyone here, everyone hear the difference? Is it that keep it out of my aim is there are certain obligations, I'm going to fulfill those obligations. Now, obviously, part of those obligations is to be respectful, it's not just checking off a list, it's being concerned, it's being conscientious. Or keep it out of my aim is if my parents want X, and if I don't do X, they're going to be unhappy, therefore, I'm not doing keep it out of aim, right? I really, really love this person, and I think I'm making a wise decision by marrying them, and I think they're great, and I think they're this, and I think they're that. And I'm not just sort of running away from something, my parents don't like them because, you know, they're Sephardi. That doesn't happen anymore, but this would be like an old issue. No offense to any Sephardi Maria. my parents don't like them because their parents, you know, her parents or his parents, you know, are divorced and they don't have money and they don't this and that. My parents don't like him because the first time he was over, he didn't, you know. There could be all sorts of reasons, and trust me, there are all sorts of reasons of why a parent might say, you know, I don't want you to do this. You violate the Hebrew Abba Eid by essentially ignoring, you're not listening, you're not fulfilling the words of what your parents want. Now, what do you think? Now, if you think it's a complex issue, the answer is it is. Yeah, please.
If you, like, respectfully take all that into consideration.
Right. Right, so that's exactly the right approach. But I'll just mention for your own edification, there's a lot of discussion in this topic, on exactly this topic, okay? So take a look, for instance, on the second line of the Ramban. This is source number 8, okay? V'chol davar sheyesh lo hanabo, okay? Aval omar lo, meaning you're supposed to respect your father for anything that you could do to sort of help them, right? Do something for them. Pick up something for them. Drive them somewhere. Okay. Aval amar lo lasos davar she'in lo hana shel klum ein ze kavoch amar Torah. I mean, just to sort of do something for your father because he wants to maybe impose his will or he has a different vision for your life, that's not necessarily part of the mitzvah of kavod. Okay, but others disagree. Others say, no, no, no. If something's important to your parents, okay, so then if you don't do it, that's a lack of kibud av va'eim. Now take a look, by the way, at the Shulchan Aruch and the Ramah who discussed this case. So it's the first line, about 10 words in. Talmud shirotzel alechas l'makom acher shehu boteach sheyira simen bracha b'tamudo. Okay, what's that case? A kid who says, you know what, I want to go back Shana Bet, Shana Gimel, Shana Vav, you know, like something. I want to go to a different yeshiva. I don't want to go third. I want to go somewhere else. Okay, so the question is, Lifnei Harav Shasham, because he says, you know what, there's such and such a person over there. V'aviv mochabo, l'fisha doeg sheba'osa ha'ir, ha'ov de kochavim malilim. Okay, this does not really seem to be a very precise case, because in that other city, there's a bunch of Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Okay, so eino tzarech lishmo l'aviv bazeh. You know what, that's your father's concern, but you don't necessarily have to listen to him. I mean, that's not sort of what we said in that Ramban. Namely, a parent should not sort of have to control the decision-making of the parents. Hagah, the Ramah says, V'chein im ha'av mocha b'ben lisa eze isha sheyachvotz b'haben ein tzarech lishmoa el ha'av. Okay? If the father says, I don't want you marrying such and such a person, so then, again, you don't necessarily have to listen to a parent. Now, these are very, very complicated areas. Why is this a complicated area? Okay, because A, you don't want to cause discord in your family. You don't want to be disrespectful. You don't want to be this. And also, by the same token, I'm not just saying this because I'm a parent. Often parents have a much better sense about areas in their kids' life than maybe kids do. You know, a 20-year-old, a 22-year-old, you know, back in the day when I went to Hask about 90 years ago, you know, people were falling in love left and right and going out. People that they should never have married or thank God in many cases didn't marry, but you know, you like someone and someone's cute and someone's this and someone's that, and all of a sudden, well, and you have such a great time together. You know, the parents can sort of look at the relationship and say, wait a second, is this like really a stable person, or we have certain concerns and we're not really into it? And then, so the answer in halacha is that you're right. Does a kid have to listen to a parent? No. Are there many cases where kids should not listen to parents? Absolutely. And it's a kid's life, and they have to seek out pizza, and often have to make boundaries, and often have to... Are there many cases where kids should be listening to their parents more than they are? And they feel like, my parents, you know, what do they know about my life, and my concerns, and my this, and my that, et cetera, et cetera. So these are all things that are part of balance, and are all part of the complexity of the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Eim, right? And how to do all these things in respectful tones, making sure that families stay together, making sure that, you know, all those things, that obviously is complicated at any age, but especially complicated in this stage of life where you're really in between the tekufa of childhood and the tekufa of full independence. And again, going back to what we said initially, part of the reason why perhaps there's the necessity of articulating and writing the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Eim because of the recognition of the complexities of exactly these situations. And all of us should be blessed.
have relations with their parents, or if you're lucky enough, their grandparents, older siblings. Amir Tzishem at some point, father-in-laws, or people have father-in-laws or stepmothers, or any of these people, or mother-in-laws, excuse me, and we should all live lives as well, which is just as important, where we're healthy, wonderful, faith-based people, that our own children see us as role models, and that's something that we work towards our entire life, our relationship with our parents, and ultimately the relationship we have with our children, and creating the type of beautiful shalshalos hamasorah that certainly is the Torah's ideal. Thank you, everyone. Have a great day.
Thank you.